just a word. You can still read the sutra from blue sheet. If we're going to read before, if Kensho Rinpoche asks us to read before the teaching, or when you read after he leave, you can still use this one. I think it comes to the same meaning as the one you get today, but I prefer this one, the terminology and the wording. I prefer this one. So during teaching, I'll be using more of this one, and you can compare, see what's the difference of the terminology.
Put the blue ones away.
Oh, so everybody has the white ones.
I'm just saying I didn't want to.
Most of them don't have.
I don't want to change the text you're using in this center. Just for the teaching of this one, I like to prefer the terminology and the sentence here, so that later you can switch back and compare the translation, and the meaning comes to the same, or pretty much the same. So you just want to use this one. I feel it's closer to the Tibetan. Even though okay, so now we just recite the sutra one more time before we have the teaching. Thus have I heard, at one time the Blessed One was dwelling in Raja Griha, that is the Vajra Mountain, together with one method, with a great assembly of monks and a great assembly of bodhisattvas. You can continue.
Okay. Sorry.
So then yesterday we were being talking about the stages of the path of the intermediate level or the stages of the path for being of medium or middle income capacity. So then basically someone has to develop a renunciation, a desire to be able to free from the suffering, which has the nature of the three sufferings, and then develop the wisdom which is able to eliminate suffering together with its causes. Then if one meditate on wisdom realizing emptiness with the intention of achieving liberation oneself, then one is able to achieve elimination. One is able to eliminate all delusions together with their causes and thereupon achieve liberation from samsara. Even though one have achieved the state of arhat or the liberation, at that time one still have not eliminated all faults and perfected all good qualities. In other words, one has not perfected one's own welfare and the welfare of others, and one has not achieved a state of Buddhahood who possess all these qualities. So then even though you can say that an arhat and a Buddha, both of them are arhats, for instance, Mukajibu, one of the student of Buddha, who is known for his clairvoyant or the supernatural powers, even though he is an arhat, a Shravaka arhat, or the arhat of the Hira vehicle, and also the Buddha is an arhat in Mahayana tradition, but there is a difference between those two, because the Hinayana arhats, for instance, Mukajibu, after his mother died, when he was searching, looking for the place where his mother was born, he was not able to see, even though he has clairvoyant power. However, the clairvoyant power of Hira arhat is not able to see like a far distance, whereas a Buddha, after he requested, asked for the place where his mother was born, the Buddha was able to tell. So there is a difference between the clairvoyance of an arhat of a Hinayana and the clairvoyance of a Buddha or the arhat of Mahayana.
So then,
if you ask what obstruct Hinayana arhat from obtaining omniscience, from knowing all phenomena. So then it says the thing that obstructs them from seeing, from obtaining omniscience, is the subtle imprints or predispositions of delusions. So because of the obstruction that is left there, which is the subtle imprints of delusions, therefore they are not able to achieve omniscience. So then, therefore, Hinayana Arhat still have to enter Mahayana and train him or herself in the Mahayana path. And to be able to enter the Mahayana path, first of all, one has to develop bodhicitta, and there are two ways for doing that. Then the two methods, one is called the seven-step instruction for developing bodhicitta, and the other is equalizing and exchanging self and others. And for developing bodhicitta using either of these two methods, one first have to develop equanimity, developing impartiality towards three categories of people. People who are one's friends and people who are one's enemies, and the neutral category. Being able to develop equanimity towards the three category of people, friends, and neutral people, that ability to develop that equanimity serves as a foundation or like a ground for the growth of the Mahayana qualities. Then, just like a nice ground is serve as a basis for the growth of plants, similarly here, if one has the foundation of the practice of equanimity, then that serves as a basis for the growth of Mahayana, the good qualities of Mahayana practice. Having developed the step of equanimity, then the next one is to recognize that all sentient beings are one's own mothers. Because the numbers of rebirth one has taken is limitless, therefore some of the sentient beings are one's own mother of previous life, and some of them are one's mother in the future life. Because the number of lifetime is limitless, therefore all sentient beings has been or will be one's own mother. Having realized that all sentient beings is one's own mother, then it's difficult to say that they haven't been one's own fathers. So we have to say that all sentient beings have been one's own father, one's relatives or daughter, or whatever. Then, since all sentient beings are our mothers, therefore, next we should also understand that they are very kind to us. Then we say a mother is very kind to us in the beginning, like after we have been conceived in mother's womb, then the mother before, from then until we are born, in that period the mother has to be extremely careful. And then, so we say that mother is kind in the beginning stage. And then the mother is also kind in a period in between. And because after we are born, before we are able to walk, mother has to really protect us. Then finally, we say the mother is very kind at the final stage, because after we grow up, the mother or our parents, they have to pay for our... They have to make sure that we receive education. They have to pay for different expenses. And then also, you can just understand the kindness of mother by looking, watching the life of the animals, like a tiger and a lion. Those animals, they eat whatever animal they see, whatever form of living being they see. But they are so kind to their own babies. They give milk to their babies, and they give food to them. They are very, very affectionate towards their own babies. So then, as all mothers are now, since we know that all sentient beings are mothers, then therefore they are very kind. Therefore, the second step is to think about the kindness of sentient beings as mothers. So then the methods, the technique for remembering or recollecting the kindness of sentient beings, thinking of the kindness of sentient beings in the methods called equalizing and exchanging self and others, is quite different from the way of recollecting, thinking of the kindness of sentient beings that is taught in the seven step instruction. Then in a method entitled equalizing and exchanging self and others, the way of thinking of kindness of other sentient beings, they're different, because there we're thinking there's a verse Rinpoche quoted. It's from the Rujung Tijemar, the Kenanji Chambit, the Rujung Tijemar. Yeah, so then Rinpoche quoted the first verse of the eight verses of thought transformation, eight verses of mind training, where it says, may I uphold sentient beings as precious as wish-fulfilling gem, and hold them as the supreme. So here it's saying that we should regard sentient beings as precious as a wish-fulfilling gem, and regard them as the highest, the most, the highest, the supreme. So here, according to the instruction entitled equalizing and exchanging self and others, we're thinking of the kindness of sentient beings in the lines that it is only dependent upon the sentient beings that we are able to practice generosity, to guard ethics, and also practice patience. Therefore, in that way, the kindness of in that way, the sentient beings are very kind. Then also we should think that the ability of us of having a house depends on the kindness of sentient beings, and also the roads that we drive on depends upon the kindness of sentient beings, and also the car we drive, or the airplane we ride in, and medicine or food, everything we take, all of these things depends on the kindness of other sentient beings.
Takana Susu Zubo, Lutia, Sijin, the Sijin Kadin, the Tensuris, Sijin Tilat Tensuris.
And then the bottom line is even the body that we have now is dependent upon we have this body is the fact that we have this body is due to the kindness of other sentient beings.
So then we say that the
attitude of the self-cherishing attitude has many faults, and the attitude which cherishes other sentient beings has many good qualities. And we say that any forms of suffering that we have experienced since beginning of samsara is due to the self-cherishing attitude, and any even the subtlest form of happiness that we have enjoyed since the beginning of samsara that we had been in is due to the kindness is due to the attitude which cherishes other sentient beings. So then, as it says in the guide, Shantideva's guide to Bodhisattva's way of life, the childish only concerns about the welfare of themselves, and the conqueror, the Buddha, performs the welfare of other sentient beings. Then we can know the difference. Meaning, we can know the difference between the self-cherishing attitude and the attitude which cherishes about other sentient beings, along these lines. So that means the Buddha, because they have only the attitude which cherishes other sentient beings, therefore they have liberated themselves from samsara a long time ago. And whereas because we ordinary sentient beings have the self-cherishing attitude, therefore we're still wandering in samsara and experiencing suffering. Since sentient beings are very kind to us, therefore we have to repay their kindness. The way for doing that is to think that just like I do not want to have suffering, therefore similarly all sentient beings do not want to have suffering. So may all sentient beings, then we're thinking in our mind, may all sentient beings be free from suffering, and how nice if it would be if all sentient beings were to be free from suffering, which is a meditation of compassion. Then also we should think that just like I want to have happiness, likewise all sentient beings want to have happiness. So may all sentient beings have happiness. How wonderful it would be if all sentient beings have happiness. So thinking in this way, we're developing the attitude of love and compassion. Then afterwards, we also go a further step, which is called the special intention, where we think that...
Oh, yeah.
So the next step is called special intention, which is thinking. I'm going to personally take this job of eliminating suffering of all sentient beings and lead them to the state of happiness. Then, having developed this attitude that I'm going to personally take the responsibility, I'm going to take this job of eliminating suffering of all sentient beings and lead them to the state of happiness. Having developed that attitude, then if we examine whether we ourselves have that ability to get rid of the suffering of all sentient beings and lead them to happiness, then we can see at that time that even ourself is not free from suffering and have achieved a permanent, a reliable form of happiness. So at that time, we can understand that that I at present do not have this ability really to eliminate suffering of all sentient beings and lead them to the state of happiness. So at that time, if we think who has that ability to eliminate suffering of all sentient beings and lead them to the state of happiness, then only a Buddha who has eliminated all faults and perfected all his good qualities is able to do that. Therefore, at this time, we develop this mind. May I become a Buddha for the benefit of all sentient beings? And that attitude is called generation, the mind generation of mind of Mahayana, bodhicitta. Once you have developed this mind of bodhicitta, the generation of the mind of Mahayana, at that time you enter the among the five paths. The first one, the path of accumulation, and there from then on, then you move, progress even further to go to the path of preparation, path of seeing, path of meditation, and then the path of no more learning in steps, gradually. Okay, so here in the Heart Sutra, the main thing that Heart Sutra talks about is a bodhisattva who is in the lineage who has the Mahayana lineage, the way such a bodhisattva traverses the path. So then it also has the discussion of Heart Sutra falls into two parts. First is the detailed explanation of how a bodhisattva of dull mental faculty practice on the different stages of the path. Path of accumulation, preparation, and then path of seeing, path of meditation, and path of no more learning. And then after that is a discussion or explanation of how a bodhisattva of sharp mental faculty traverse the path by means teaching the way of teaching a bodhisattva, of a sharp disciple, by means of mere expression of the words of mantra. So there are these two parts. And then, first of all, Shariputra is going to ask the question to Avalokiteshvara, how should a bodhisattva train him or herself on the different stages, the path of accumulation, preparation, and so forth.
What is that? Shiro Nibi Gandate, and then Jangalu Yachevayina, and the Sanjitun, Jujisha, Jungitun, Jugitun, and the Sajiji Tune, and the Shiro Nibi Dundus Dundu, and the Tendal Haramba to Saji Pishin Dogs.
So then, to give the explanation of the Heart Sutra, according to the commentary composed by the Tibetan master Jiang Yang Galo, then the explanation falls into four parts. Then these are the four being the meaning of the title, then the paying of homage of the translator, then the explanation of the scripture, and then finally the meaning of the concluding section. So the explanation is divided into the four parts according to Jiang Galo, the commentary of Jan Galo's commentary. Then also, if you look at the commentary composed by Denda Laramba, it's also similar.
What is it? That change in the Gaju was Shiro Nibu, the Santa Day Kijina, and Shiro Nibu Ten Gaju. Santa Day Kitulu, Shiro Nibu Ten, Purgitul Juvena, and the Gandagalis of Waters.
So the first part is called the meaning of the title. So here is giving the title of Heart Sutra in Sanskrit. What is the title of Sanskrit? Title of Heart Sutra in Sanskrit. And then secondly, if you translate that Sanskrit title into Tibetan, what would it be? So the explanation of those would falls into the category of the first category of meaning of the title. So at this point, if you have the text, you can look at it. Rinpoche is going to give the explanation based on the text. So then, at first, which is not in your text, but in the Tibetan text, it says Yagaketu in Indian language, Bhagavati Paraparamita Shindaya. So this is giving the title of Heart Sutra in Sanskrit language.
What is it? Tane Jagaka to Bangladesh, this hundred day kid is, and then Baba to the Santa Taki Shibur Maris. Santa Taki then, Timu the Jan, Gubakari was, Karajin Javas, Tivaina, then Jusen was, Gubayu was.
So then, this title here given at the beginning of the text is a Sanskrit title. Then you might have the question, since the Tibetans do not understand Sanskrit, then what is the purpose of having the Sanskrit written at the beginning of the text? Then we say that there is a special purpose for doing that. So then the purpose here for having this Sanskrit title in the Tibetan text is done for the purpose of leaving the imprints for the Sanskrit language. Then the reason for doing that is because we say in India, in this eon, 1,000 Buddha are going to appear and teach Buddhism. And among the 1,000 Buddhas, only four of them have appeared and given the teaching. And then there are 996 Buddhas yet to appear and teach. Then it says that all these Buddhas, when they turn the wheel of Dharma, they will be giving the teachings in Sanskrit language. So then, that is for the reason we have Sanskrit title here is so that we can leave some imprints for the Sanskrit language so that in the future we can meet with the Buddha and experience his teaching.
Ane tuni tuvi sherade tuni de maris masukunaga. Ta tuni tuvi sherade kajuware. Ane tuni tuvi sherade tuni tuvi sherab kongi ena tala tenen nyetu ki shanchu tutu gure, raja ki shanchu tutu gure, theba chenbi shanchu tutu gure. Shanchu songi shanchu songa shanchu songi thumu ju yime ane madan tawares. Amade amaraga yima ena ane jai baba jidan duva ena jai biche karwa. Bhagavad Baba Jidan Duva Yina, Bhagavad Baba Jidan Duva Yina, Ani Kashu Gwari, Ani Loma Jena Gwe, Chuka Jidan Duva Yina, Dei Baba Jidan Duva, Pei Thumo Gwari, Tendra Gwari, Tendra Gwari.
And then it says in Tibetan language, it gave the title in Tibetan, Jundan Dema Sheragi Palodu Nimbu, which means the Sutra of the Heart of Perfection Wisdom, the Mother of the Blessed One. So it's calling the Heart Sutra, here it's giving is calling the wisdom realizing emptiness as the mother of the blessed one, or the mother of Bhagavan, the mother of the Buddha, basically. Then we're calling this, calling wisdom realizing emptiness the mother of the Buddhas, then that is because wisdom realizing emptiness is the cause for achieving enlightenment of Hira's vehicle, solitary realizer's vehicle, and the Mahayana, the great vehicle. It serves as a common cause for the achievement of enlightenment of all three vehicles. It's a common cause, therefore we're calling it mother, because according to the Tibetan or the Eastern culture, or as Rinpoche said one time, the Buddhist culture, the mother is considered as a common cause. Like if a mother marries, a woman marries, like a Tibetan woman marries, for instance, an American husband, then the children born will be considered as American, according to the tradition. And then if a mother is a Tibetan and marries to a Tibetan husband, then the children will be considered Tibetan, or whichever husband, whichever country the husband come from, the children will be considered as from that country. So it is for this reason the mother is considered as the common cause of the children, and therefore here the wisdom realizing emptiness being the common cause is given the name mother, mother of the Buddhas. So then we say that the bodhicitta, the bodhicitta is the uncommon cause of achievement of enlightenment. So if you practice bodhicitta, it only leads to the attainment of the Mahayana enlightenment, the Buddhahood. Therefore, we say that bodhicitta is a unique cause for the achievement of the enlightenment, whereas the wisdom realizing emptiness is the general cause. Therefore, because in this way we say that bodhicitta is similar to father in a sense that it's a unique cause. Therefore, then that is called like a father, whereas wisdom realizing emptiness is like a mother. And then it also says, this is the Tibetan title, may not be in your English translation, and it says the essence or the heart of the heart of perfection of wisdom. So here we say that emptiness is the highest or the best, the supreme object among all object of knowledge, all phenomena, and then also the wisdom realizing emptiness, which is the highest object, is the wisdom which realizes emptiness, and this is considered as the highest form of wisdom. So therefore, it's called the heart of wisdom. It's the heart of wisdom, like the best of the wisdoms. So then here the next part of the explanation is called the prostration of the translator. So here in some translation you will see that a translator might say I bow down to the wisdom of the perfection of I bow down to the Sutra of the perfection, the heart of the perfection wisdom, the mother of the blessed one. But some of them, according to another tradition, the translator would say, "I bow down to all Buddhas and Bodhisattvas." And this, the second one, is done in accordance with the rule which was made by an ancient Tibetan king. Then the reason for doing that is because there, in the Buddhist scriptures, consists of three baskets. The sutra baskets, sutra basket, Vinaya basket, and then the Abhidhamma basket. Then the reason for making different kinds of prostration, saying different things, is for the sake of eliminating confusion as to which category does a particular scripture belong to. So therefore the king made the rule that if a text is a sutra, belongs to the sutra basket, then a translator would say, "I bow down to all Buddhas and Bodhisattvas." And then if a text is an Abhidhamma scripture, then the translator would say, "I bow down to Manjushi." Whereas if a text is Abhidhamma scripture, then the translator would say, did I repeat it? Okay.
Vinaya.
If Vinaya, then a translator would say, "I bow down to omniscience." So in this way, this is a rule made by the king, so that just by looking at the beginning of prostration of the translator, you can tell which category does the text belong to, falls into.
Haba Shiroj Lava Tenji Dushi and Tembi, and the Dunas of Kangalo, Mubitan, the Marbe. Tingazi Lava Tenji Dushi and Tembi Kangalo, Dudin, what things?
So then we might wonder what is the reason for dividing Buddhist scriptures into the three categories, the three baskets. Then it says because there is the three different kinds of subject matter, that is the three higher trainings that is taught in Buddhism. In general, we say that there are. If we just say the three trainings, then that is not exclusive to Buddhist teaching, because even the non-Buddhists have the three trainings of ethics, concentration, and wisdom. So in Buddhism, when we talk about the three trainings, we normally use the term the three higher trainings. So that's the higher training of ethics, the higher training of concentration, and then the higher training of wisdom. So here, if a text is teaching If a text is teaching ethics as its main subject matter, then that is the that is the Vinaya text, Vinaya scripture. Then if a text is teaching high training of concentration as its main subject matter, then that falls into the category of that's a sutra. Then if a text is teaching the high training of wisdom as its main subject matter, then that becomes a text, that becomes a Abhidhamma text. So then we say that the three baskets, the three category of scriptures, commentates or they explains the three high trainings. Then why is there a need for differentiating, making a division of the three high trainings? Then we say that all teachings of Buddha is given for the purpose of eliminating suffering and its causes. Then to give an example of how different kinds of teachings function. For instance, if you are cutting a tree, then first of all, you need to have a very sturdy body, a very strong body. And then secondly, you need to have a strong arm. And finally, you need to have a very sharp weapon to be able to cut the tree. Then similarly, in order to eliminate suffering and its causes, we need to have the support of ethics, which is like a stable body. And then also we need to have the stable practice of concentration, which is like a strong arm. And finally, sharp wisdom, which is like a sharp weapon that cuts a tree. And if we have these three elements, then we can eliminate suffering together with their causes. So it's in this way there is a need for the three trainings of ethics, concentration, and wisdom. So then we say that the three trainings is needed, is required in the Hinayana, Mahayana, or in the Sutra and Tantra teachings. They are indispensable in all these different forms of Buddhist teachings. Then if you're reading the from the Tibetan text, it also says Pambuchigo, that means one section, having one section. That is showing that since the Heart Sutra doesn't have a lot of words, so it's only there's only one section. The reason for having different sections is so that you can not to confuse with them, and you can know dividing the text up, if it's a long one, into different sections. So then here the third part, having finished the preceding two sections, then the third part of the explanation is the explanation of the scripture itself. And then this is in turn further divided into the two parts. Then these are the two being the introduction, or if you will, background information. And then the second is the explanation of the actual scripture itself. And then the first one then has introduction has two parts, the general introduction and then a specific introduction. And in the general introduction, what is given is the place where Buddha taught this scripture and place, time, and then the teacher, and then the disciples, the audience of the event. Then when Buddha taught this scripture, of course, when he gave this teaching, of course, he didn't say that at one time the Blessed One was staying there in this place and teaching such disciples. But then he didn't say that. But later, Buddha, instructed the disciples to add the background information, place, time, and teacher and audience to the scripture. So the students, they according to the instruction from Buddha, they add those background information to the text. So these are here. We also can say that these are also words of Buddha, even though not directly spoken. They are words of Buddha, which is merely suggested by him.
What the Lije Dalatin, the Gedag Tuba Dujina Shavi, Dukhonsun Tuba, the Gedag Tuba Dujin, Tundin, the Jabiko, Shabu Pumi Shiva Dege, Nemusun Tuba, Gulung Nicham Shavi, Kopansun Tuba, Tundin, the Shavi, Swamp of Pansun Tuba, Pansun Tuba Jinepune, and the Pansun Tuba Jinepun with us, Ninja Pansun Tuba Jinepun.
So then in the general introduction here, what is discussed is the four excellent qualities of this teaching. So here it says at one time, this is showing the excellent time when the teaching took place. And then when it says the Blessed One was dwelling in Rajagriha on the mast of Vulture's mountain, that is showing the excellent place where the teaching took place. And then together in one method, meaning one method is a literal translation meaning together. In one method just means together, with a great assembly of monks and great assembly of bodhisattvas. So this is the showing the excellent audience who took this teaching. And then the Blessed One shows the excellent teacher. So this the beginning of the text is written by means of showing the four excellent qualities of this teaching.
Ane kawaii warisana, ane shangchu sembata, dadnaba tsuki, lotur zingi waris, majib zungtubi, ane shangchu sembata, kotu tsuki, tsujun zungtu zingi waris.
So then, here you might wonder, when a text says, thus I have heard, you might wonder who heard, who is this I? Then to give the background of the situation here, when Buddha, when he first gave the teachings, there were no books. It was not written down, not in the form of a book. Then after he given the teaching, the teachings that he gave was only memorized by the disciples, the arhats, the disciples of Buddha, the people who has attained the retention of non-forgetfulness. Only those people memorize the teachings in their mind.
That's why you